Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle. www.serotalk.com, a production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 194 for April 7th, 2014. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm not sure if I'm Joe Steinkamp or not. It's been a long time since I've been in this room. What? Huh? Where? What?
Wow. I was kind of thinking the same thing, man. We haven't done this for a while.
Absolutely. No. We actually recorded that April Fool's thing prior to CSUN, believe it or not.
Yep. And then, of course, Buddy and Alina and Jamie, the Triple Click Home Takeover, that happened for episode 192. And very nice job done by all, of course.
And the takeover of that Android show and Triple Click Home. That was awesome. That was really cool.
Yes.
That was
Triple Click show and that Android Home or
that Android something. Home. I thought that Android Home was like that. Or Home Screen if you want. So that
works.
Yeah.
A lot of effort and time went into that. You know, the concepts were thought of a long time ago, and shout out to Buddy for doing an awesome infomercial. Buddy Mays. That's what we call him on staff now.
And if you order your GTO now, you'll get a ShamWow absolutely free.
This is true. This is definitely true.
And some OxyClean.
That's even more true. But thank you to all of your letters, nice and unnice, and your iReports of nice and unnice. And at the end of the interview segment, you will hear some of those April Fool's comments. We just thought they needed their own little space outside of mailbag. So definitely listen to the very end of the show to hear those wonderful comments by everyone. And thank you for those who got the joke, and thanks for retweeting it. It was really a fun time, and just about everybody on SPN staff was involved, and so we do appreciate it.
So yes, while mailbag was here frolicking with lots of people other than us, we were in San Diego and doing all sorts of CSUN coverage. You can catch that, of course, on serotalk.com. But, you know, occasionally we drop things. There's so many audio files, and those things get really heavy to carry. And there's one that we didn't get to include in the specials that you can check out on serotalk.com. So coming up after the news here, we will have an interview that Joe did with Ability Magazine, which is actually pretty cool. You'll want to stay tuned for that.
Definitely. And we have an article here that has a list of pretty much all of the content that was came out of CSUN. Lots of podcasts and presentations and that sort of thing. It's always great when someone can take the time to really kind of pull all this stuff together. And that has been done here. Blind Bargains did a lot of stuff. Dr. Carter on the Tech Doctor podcast. And so you can just listen to CSUN pretty much up until time for NFV convention if you want to, I think.
Yeah, that's about right. And there are also slides of presentations that were done about accessibility on this list. And this guy does this every year. He puts together the big list of CSUN stuff.
Less than 90 days. Ah, Jamie just gave me nightmares.
I thought we were going to get to relax for a minute or two.
I guess not. Guess Jamie just put me on notice.
No.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Mm. Yeah, I'm just saying.
That's right.
Yeah, the note-taker thing was kind of interesting. You know, Dave Wilkins of HIMSS did his presentation on iDevice versus note-taker, and then that got Applefist, Alex, to post something about that. And then Dr. Carter just released a podcast on iTaker versus note-taker versus note phone. You know, it's a neat conversation that's going on about this, and I think it's something that we've always had minor conversations about on Triple Click or that Android show to minor conversations about it in the case of Android, but it does seem to be the conversation that came out of CSUN was, do I need this? Do I want to back up? You know, the same thing's coming up again with the Blaze announcement from HIMSS. So that got conversation back about Victor Reader Stream and, do I want that, or do I want my iDevice to be the ultimate device kind of thing? And with that in mind, people talked about that on social network everywhere. And speaking of more everywhere, Ricky did a little presentation for Hadley School about our wonderful socializer, which you can get a demo of by heading on over to serotalk.com/downloads. But check out the show notes for this presentation that I assisted with, yay, in a very small way, on the Hadley website, and the archives can be found at serotalk.com.
Yeah, he did get to assist in that by saying hello to everyone. And oddly enough, we didn't start talking about games during that presentation. We could have easily fallen into an EOL show thing where we started conversing about games in front of everyone that I was demoing for, but we did not. However, lots of other people are talking about games, including the reinvention of Braille card games. And this is kind of interesting. There was a Kickstarter campaign done by 64 Ounce Games, and the idea behind this was to make sleeves that would go over standard cards such as Apples to Apples. There are other card games that, you know, look very different than a standard card deck, but you can fit Braille sleeves over them to make them playable by the blind, and you're not having to sit there and Braille your own stuff. So they did this Kickstarter campaign and got well over their goal. So I think they're going to do much more than they originally intended to do. We have an article in the show notes talking about how you can learn more information about what they're doing and even contribute to the Kickstarter before it closes.
And Blind Bargains is posting a lot about this. They are championing a lot of that cause, including, I think they're over 12,000 at time of recording, and or getting close to it, because I think one of their other funding goals is that if they reach beyond 12,000, they were talking about accessible dice for role-playing games. So definitely keep watching them on Twitter. Keep reading on Blind Bargains, because they are giving some up-to-date things, because so many people are increasing their donation or their pledge. Sorry, not donation, it's Kickstarter. Increasing their pledge and and or making new pledges to help these guys out. It is one of our better success stories this year.
Well, while these guys are kind of working the bugs out of getting these accessible card games up and running, looking forward to that. Apple's got some bugs of its own to deal with as far as the blind community is concerned. Probably not only maybe the blind community, but certainly if you have a Bluetooth keyboard, there are some issues that if you use VoiceOver, the control key is causing some very strange and bizarre things to happen that are not good. As far as Ricky, do you totally understand this? Because I'm not sure I do, honestly.
Basically, what seems to be happening is that if you are pressing the control key by itself to silence VoiceOver, and possibly in some other instances as well, then the control key sort of seems to get stuck. And so you're not able to move through edit boxes, you're not able to type things in and what have you. And so this article tells a little about how you can keep that from happening. And one thing that you can do is if you're going to silence speech, you can press control, but hold it down and then press option with it. Because if control isn't being pressed by itself, then I don't think you're encountering the bug. And there are some other things in this article as well that I don't entirely remember because I don't use a Bluetooth keyboard, but it is a very legitimate workaround that is helping people with this. There are some other keyboard issues that have been around since 7.0 and still haven't been addressed in the 7.1 update. So if you've got a Bluetooth keyboard, you definitely want to check out AppleViz to see how you can use that without much problem by implementing these workarounds.
Well, Joe, while some people are in playing with their iDevices, other people are actually becoming physically fit and out doing things.
Like
running.
Running?
Ew. Running.
No.
Really? I'm not kidding.
No, that's like fast walking, isn't it? Or really fast walking?
Pretty much.
Yeah, you move your legs rapidly and things.
Not something that I will rush right out and do unless heading towards one of those things I don't like flying in. you know, the tube with the wings on it, you know, those things.
Yeah.
I don't like either one of those. In fact, I might actually run before I will fly.
What if there were donuts at the end and you had to run and get those?
There's a thought.
Sorry.
See, now we got his motivation.
There we go. Run for a donut. Mm-hmm. It seems kind of like, like a circular argument, doesn't it? It really does. I'm sorry. I was laughing at my own joke. Maury actually is into running. She talked about this on High Contrast and has talked about marathons before. So if you go back to, I think, episode 5 or 7, something like that, back in the High Contrast archives, you'll hear Maury talking about running in marathons and how excited she is about doing so with the runners. She was very fascinated about this kind of thing. And it seems like at the Boston Marathon, there was more visually impaired people running than ever before, which is a good thing, of course, for those who like to do said thing. That's still kind of neat. And it's a doable sport. You know, if you have someone kind of running in parallel with you, you do kind of sort of get caught in traffic a little bit, but not so much that you don't hamper or impede the other runners or they impede you. And it's kind of like when you're skiing, you kind of have something that designates you so the runners can kind of sort of be aware, which is kind of helpful as well. I think there was some controversy, though, not too long ago about who gets credit for the run. You remember that?
Yeah, Dave Wilkinson and I were actually talking about this. I'm not entirely sure how that came up at CSUN, but he enjoys running in marathons as well. And I was asking about whether the guide gets credit for having done the marathon or not. And he says that in some cases they do. And in some marathons, and I don't remember if the Boston Marathon was among them, but in some marathons, no, the guide, even though in some instances you have the same guide for the entire marathon rather than switching off, the guide still doesn't get credit for the marathon, even though they went all that way, just like you did. And that is very bizarre.
Indeed, that is. Doesn't seem right to me.
But, no.
Oh, wow.
One of you will have to run and let me know about it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Get right on that? Okay. Yeah, not a problem.
Kickstarter campaign, pay Joe $10,000 to go run in a marathon.
sounds like its own documentary series and or reality television show. That's what that sounds like.
That it does.
Yeah, chances are I'll just end up playing more Braille card games. Coming up after the break, Jamie's going to play with fire yet again. Ricky's going to open up some windows, and I'm going to try and get the handle back on doing one of these shows because it's been a while. All that and more, and probably some big mistakes. Coming up on Serotalk 194.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Serotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to Serotalk 194, where it's going to sound like we're making another April Fool's joke, but we actually aren't. There's actually news this week. But there was a lot of big news. We're just getting to some of the top of the news, but wow, there was a lot of stuff that happened since the last time that Ricky and I were on a show. One of the things that happened last week was Amazon decided to release this set-top box that they threatened everybody with for a long time, which means probably a phone is right around the corner, or so Molly Wood kind of thinks over at her blog. But the Amazon Kindle Fire TV, which sounds like it might catch fire on your TV. I'm not sure, but that's not the greatest name for something that would put near electrical devices like that. It was released last week. We're talking about a quad-core processor, which is a Qualcomm. It is about the size of a CD case. It is really a device that just kind of sort of works within the Amazon ecosystem, no different than the way that, say, Jamie's now soon-to-be-outdated Apple TV works within the Apple ecosystem.
Well, yeah, there is that, isn't there? Apparently, people aren't quite as happy with voice search as... why does that seem to be a pattern? People just aren't as happy with voice search as they want to be, I think. But, gosh, you know...
there's nothing about this.
The price isn't
huge.
Horrible. What is it?
$99. So it's competing right against it.
Yeah.
I mean, you get a microphone in the remote, so you can talk to the remote, which
But the voice search thing only covers things inside Amazon, I think. So you can't use this, even though this supports Netflix and Hulu and stuff. You can't do searches there, so you're still going to have to manually navigate through those things, but you can search for Prime stuff, and that's just a little bit weird. Here's Netflix, but no, you can't talk to it.
Yeah, it's just another streaming box. We've got an article here that compares this to the Chromecast and Apple TV and all the other ones that are out there, and there was an interesting on Tom Merritt's Daily Tech News show. He was interviewing his guest, and he actually bought one. He was half asleep when the announcement came out, and then he was in the shower and realized, I have five other things that does everything this does. So why should I? And he canceled his order. He's like, I don't need another streaming box. He said, if you're into technology, you already have this. You have an Apple TV, or you have a Chromecast, or you have an Xbox, or you have PlayStation, or you have all these other streaming boxes. And the only advantage is if you live in the Amazon ecosystem to the same extent as, you know, the Apple TV is great if you have a bunch of stuff in iTunes. It works out really, really, really well. So this is kind of a Me Too product, except Amazon did make some huge name hires in games. You can actually order a controller for $39.99 to go along with this and play some Amazon-ish games. And I say that because this is still based off of the Android fork known as the Amazon OS version of Android. The odd thing is that, of course, no mention of accessibility of any type or any kind in the user's manual. And I've seen others say that there isn't a way to easily add this, although I have seen some people post things about sideloading apps. So that maybe that's it. It seems kind of weird because as we have from our own buddy Brandon, a review of the Amazon Kindle Fire HDX, where there is accessibility. So it seems either like all arms of Amazon were not talking, or that they didn't think that this was a market at first for this kind of service.
Blind people don't watch TV.
That's correct.
We already grudgingly gave you people books. What do you want TV for?
Go use Audible.
yeah. Yeah. The weird thing about this Fire TV thing is that, first of all, I think the games thing is a little strange, but maybe that's because there aren't that many there yet, but there are going to be lots of them. So that's one thing that they've done differently than Apple or Roku or anybody else. But the other thing is that they're supposedly not necessarily marketing this to the Prime people. So it is really good if you're in the Amazon ecosystem, but they want to bring in outside people. So they want to get enough streaming services, which they don't have already, but they want to get enough streaming services that this becomes attractive to somebody who already has an Apple TV or a Roku or whatever. And the idea is that, okay, once they come in, then they're going to want to subscribe to Prime because they want to get all the streaming from Amazon Video and such. But if they were going to do that, I feel like they released this a little early if they were going to do that, because they don't have any of the subscription streaming music services for once. You don't get Spotify.
I have a theory. A
few other things. Okay.
Google TV / now Android TV, a slimmer, thinner, went and got a new dress version of Google TV, is announced really, really soon, possibly by the time you're listening to this podcast. The Verge has already shown some screenshots of Android TV. It could be in response to that and to make sure that they're putting their foot down in that space, especially with Microsoft getting ready to announce more original stuff for Xbox / Microsoft TV. It could be, if we don't get this out now, we'll get lost in the sea of things. And if we're out here, we might get some type of advantage of being here before all the bigger news comes out from Microsoft Build or from Android TV. So it could be that Amazon felt like, yeah, we got to do this now, because if we wait any longer, it'll just be seen as a Me Too even more than it already is.
Well, you mentioned Microsoft. I mean, they weren't about to be upstaged by Amazon this week. They had a lot to say about Windows 8.1. What is it? 8.1 update one, or how do you?
Nobody knows quite what to call it. That thing.
1 update. That's what I've seen the recent one, because there was spring update and, as we affectionately used to call it, Service Pack 1. But
But they're not calling this a Service Pack. No.
But it's a big update, you know, coming right off the heels of Windows 8.1, which in itself was a big update in October to Windows 8. Now, the really important news about this here, since you are a wonderful Sarah Talk listener,
yes,
you didn't get one of those newfangled laptops with the old touchscreen on it? Neither did I. The first thing, you can use a keyboard and mouse and not get punished for it. Yay!
This will be certainly worth a download.
For that note, I mean, you boot into a desktop. Yay! That's also something kind of cool. Microsoft recanting or saying mea culpa or giving up, however you want to look at it. Yeah, Microsoft is bringing back all sorts of stuff in Windows 8.1 update.
It's Windows 8.1, the backpedal edition. that's what we'll call it instead of update.
When you load it, beep, beep, beep.
Backing up.
That should be just the start sound.
That's the startup sound. Yeah, a combination of the Windows 7 startup sound, because I don't think they had them in Windows 8, or at least they weren't turned on by default.
No, it's probably more those innocuous sounds that come in when you have an update and you don't have any idea because you didn't hear a balloon go off to tell you whatever the hell it did. It's like, bling, what does that mean? What did you do? What happened? I don't even understand.
I don't know what that bling means. Well, that might be way different in Windows 9, but we don't actually have any ideas about that because that's a little further out. We're not going to see that until 2015 at some point. So now what you're going to get is kind of like the bigger picture. What is Microsoft planning for Windows 9? And it may very well just be a bit more backpedaling and some other things. And then they're also probably going to want to make search a little more integrated than it is already, so that you're able to, you know, type in something and have it search the web and Wikipedia and all these other wonderful thingies or your machine and just make that easier than it is right now.
But in the last, since we left CSUN, the last 2 weeks from the point of this recording, Microsoft, and I said it, I'm not joking, Microsoft is back. I mean, Satya is an amazing speaker. He comes from the enterprise division. He really is good at explaining what the mission statement is, what the viewpoint is, what one Windows actually means, you know, windowing apps, you know, so you can actually be able to pin things to start menu and put some of those things that you see in the start screen in taskbar. And I mean, there's a lot going on here. And then, of course, there was Office for iPad, which is somewhat usable. I won't completely say accessible. I don't really feel comfortable using that term here yet because it depends on which, you know, app we're using, whether it be Word or PowerPoint or Excel, and whether you're using it as touch or if you're using it on keyboard. I've heard various people tell me fun things about Excel with formulas and how it's working, how it's not working. I've had other people tell me that PowerPoint is readable, but not necessarily creatable with VoiceOver. And of course, this is just a first revision. This is just the apps are out there kind of thing. But it does look like they put some thought into how VoiceOver works with the iPad editions of Office. And that actually might bode well for Office 2014, which is supposed to come out before the end of the year. But Microsoft is painting itself as the underdog. And I think that they are doing a lot between this Windows Phone 8.1, which we will know more about later this month, and probably a lot more about Windows 9 over the coming months as we get closer to their, you know, community preview or their technical preview. Ooh. So Microsoft has done a lot of work to kind of regain its footing and to put Ballmer in their rearview mirror. So they don't back up over him, maybe would be probably a good idea.
Wow.
Well, good old Apple is not going to stand around and let Microsoft and Amazon have all the fun. They're playing with iBeacons, or maybe I should say other people are playing with iBeacons here recently. some interesting things about this. I'm really fascinated to see where this goes, not this particular story specifically, but iBeacons in general. Using them in airports? This article says a real-world test. I'm saying a real-world workout, if you think about how crowded airports are and the yeah. fact that the airlines could actually maybe send you information about their services. And I would assume things like where flights are and the status of different things like that, depending on where you are in the airport and how these iBeacons are placed. But they have to be careful and not interfere with each other and interfere with Wi-Fi. And sounds like a mess to me, but we'll see.
Kind of does, but I guess they're able to like stick them on things, like they have some kind of adhesive something or other that you can just, put them on somewhere.
Gum and from children in the airport.
The iBeacon is stuck to that gum. Don't move that from under the table.
Oh my gosh, it's Hubba Bubba. I can smell it from here. Oh no. This is where the iBeacon is. I think that technology is just getting started, and I know there's a push for others to do something like it, or Apple to open iBeacons up a little bit with the API, because you don't want that to be just an Apple-only device situation, especially for people coming in on international flights where Apple devices are not the lead in mobiles in those countries. At the same time, it would be nice to somewhat know which gates you're flying past in the accessible cart of death that goes zooming around from terminal to terminal, and know that, oh, he went 30 gates out of the way before he took me over to my gate. That's good to know why I'm missing this flight. Yay!
Starbucks ahead, 20 feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What I hope that does, though, is when you're sitting waiting for a flight, and they move the gate, your plating is now 5 gates down. It'd be nice to be able to do that without having to follow the throng or ask someone which gate
yes.
is that. Yeah, that would be kind of
love that.
Or you ride past Starbucks on said annoying cart of death, and hey, I'm going to have to wait for a layover. There was a Starbucks 3 gates back. So there's some really good opportunities here. How that works and how does it get in the way of how you do your mobility? Do you get like inundated with, boom, here is an ad for a service you don't want, next to, boom, your bathroom just went by. It's kind of, there's a lot to sort of be worked out, because visuals will be easy to ignore. And for us, I don't know that I want 72 beacons at Denver's airport in my head. That might be a bit much.
I kind of do. And I wonder if you could make it such that, like, you could ignore certain iBeacons forever. So if there was an iBeacon for, Old Navy or something that you just cared nothing about, say, don't ever tell me about Old Navy ever again. And it wouldn't matter where you were, you wouldn't get
We that. Have fleas. Look at these fleas. Great fleas.
Get your summer, flannel get some fleas. Here.
There's an article here in the show notes that does talk about targeting people with iBeacons. Oh, how Minority Report is this? And that you could do something like that. So maybe if it would be like notifications in iOS, where you could say, banners or, iBeacon reminders, you could filter those out. And that would be really nice. I'm not saying that that's got to be how they do it, but it's a possibility.
Or tell me all about this particular brand. Like Zatarain's is doing this. I think they're one of the first to have iBeacons in stores, so you can go grab your red beans and rice. This is kind of cool.
That is true. Or you could simulate things what it would be like to walk through a minefield. There's an article here from the United Nations and iBeacons. And, this gets back to what Jamie was talking about being with the Titanic exhibit and finding out he was the captain. There's great ways that you could use this for education. And we've talked about it for how it would be used at a baseball stadium to find your seat, or the 18-inch corn dog that's available at the Arizona Diamondback Stadium that's filled with jalapenos, cheese, and bacon, by the way.
Or
I like
the poutine dog.
Or that's up in Detroit. JJ said he's going to try that. I would try more the 3 pounds of ice cream and the $17 batter's helmet that's available at the Chicago White Sox Stadium. That sounds kind of good. And I'm not kidding. That is actually how much ice cream is in that thing. So you have it to go throughout all nine innings, and that would be good. The thing that we're talking about here, though, and it's much more serious, is, of course, the simulation of stepping on a landmine by trying to walking through a minefield and stepping on things. What a simulation. I mean, certainly it can't put you in the idea of, unfortunately, stepping on said landmine, but having the idea or the suspense or the understanding of what it must be like to try and walk in a very dangerous spot and how careful you would probably have to be, that's a great use of this technology too. So there are all sorts of ways that you can look at how iBeacons and some others, because there are some other technologies that are competing for this, could do a little bit better. And this does seem to put to rest, well, when is Apple going to do NFC tags, Jamie?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's probably something that's not gonna happen. No, I mean, this is one of those jarring things that I think it's probably good to raise awareness. The concern a little bit is that it's a really loud explosion in your earbuds. Now, I have accidentally turned things up too loud on my iPod or iPhone, and I can attest to the fact that you can reach some pretty high volumes on those things.
Oh, yeah.
With a good pair of earbuds. And so I hope they're a little bit careful about just how ear-splitting that is, because you could actually damage someone's hearing that way.
I will say wholeheartedly, one of my favorite things about 7.1, and I do have one or two things that I like about iOS 7.1, I do like the new connection sound. I never liked that screech dock charging sound.
The new one's all soft and kind of unobtrusive.
But I know what it's doing. It's not like a Windows 8 balloon.
No. Well, coming up after the break, I'm going to really get into some music. Joe's going to steal a painting, and Ricky's going to go downstairs right here on Sarah Talk Podcast 194.
This is a test to find out if you know it all when it comes to children. Time starts now. Name one of the leading killers of U.S. children age 1 to 13. What's the best way to protect children in a car crash? At what age and size should a child start using a booster seat? Where can you find the answers to these questions?
Car crashes are one of the leading killers of U.S. children. Many of those deaths could be prevented by making sure that kids are in the right seat for their age and size. Don't assume you know it all when it comes to car seats for your child. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat and know for sure. That's safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk Podcast 194 with the team all back together again. Let's take a look at the mailbag. Now, the mailbag should be all rested up, shouldn't he, Ricky? I mean, because you guys were gone and he was like just hanging out. Right.
Well, maybe for part of the time, but then Mailbag was all frolicking on the beach and Mailbag jumped into the Pacific. Actually, Mailbag may have thrown us into the Pacific Ocean as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mailbag was just hiding. Crazy.
What? How did he?
Mailbag was like buying people drinks and food and stuff, man. You didn't know?
No, I thought he was just hiding because he was mad.
Okay, hold on. Let me see.
So,
let me see here.
Bringing up the security camera footage.
Let me describe to you.
Yeah, that's
in true DVS fashion. What just happened with Mailbag? Yes. All right, here we go.
Okay.
Mailbag, looking around and knowing that no one was around, took confiscated office supplies, including some paper clips and a leftover bungee cord from a broken cane. After fashioning his makeshift lockpick, he then escaped out of his cage, but was then faced with either going through the roof and its skylight, or should he actually go through the door? Make your choice now. Mailbag decides to go through the door. He takes a braille slate, sharpens it on the floor, picks the lock, and escapes with Jamie's credit card to the airport.
Now, Mailbag may have thought about going through the roof, but I am definitely going to go through the roof if you took my credit card.
Yeah, that mailbag actually cool. bought mailbag a lot like of stuff for a lot of people.
And, like, looking for all sorts of cash. I thought it was really strange that he was, like, you know, being so generous, throwing it around, you know.
On the flip side, though, mailbag did do a lot of kind of dancing and cavorting and playing some kind of bizarre instrument that I've never seen before. And then people were just kind of throwing coins into mailbag.
Vuvuzela, I think it was, you know.
Yes. So the mailbag is full of coins, loose change, a few dollars here and there.
I would hit him up for that bill. I would bring it up to him now.
This is going to cover all that. Yeah.
Especially before convention. Mailbag, that is, you need to go tell Jamie you're sorry. You really do. And yes. Then I'd run like heck.
Yeah. Not very well behaved lately.
No.
Mr. / Ms. Mailbag. I tell you what.
And I don't even know if that was Mailbag Prime, because that could have been one of the other mailbags.
There are several running around now.
One might blame the other. You know, we need to tattoo them or something so we could actually put chains around them or luggage tags where they beep, beep, beep so we know where they are, something.
Well, let's see if this one has mail for Sarah Talk inside it. That may at least tell us for a little while which one this is. Ah, look. Yes, these appear to be Sarah Talk tagged iReports and cards and letters and such among all the loose change here. Let's pull out this first one from TJ.
Hello, Sarah Talk crew. This is TJ Malloy. I was listening to Sarah Talk podcast 191 and heard the discussion about the TV show Growing Up Fisher. And I just wanted to say, as a blind person who has a sense of humor about his disability, I actually find the show very enjoyable. I find it to be a very good show, and I think there is a good message portrayed in that you don't have to hide his blindness. You know, the episode that sticks out to me is when he was eating with the big client who never knew he was blind, and he revealed that, and the client says, well, he's done good work for us in the past. As long as that continues, I'll stay with him. You know, that's what really matters in the end. So I think there's some good messages in it and some good humor. So I hope they keep up the good work on that show and it stays around for a while.
So, TJ, you weren't the only person who sent in an iReport about this. We also had one from Eric Troop saying very much the same thing as you about Growing Up Fisher. And these two iReports have prompted me to at least consider watching. You know, I might skim the first episode and then see what happens in the second and third and see if they're sort of improving. Because I'm all for looking at blindness or pretty much anything else in life in a humorous way, as long as it isn't humorous, you know, at the expense of representing reality. So maybe this show is doing a better job than we thought of portraying blindness as something that you can chuckle at, as well as, you know, presenting this in a realistic light. And that's kind of cool.
Maybe I need to go back and listen to our comments, because I didn't think, I got the impression from some of the feedback that maybe we came across as being a little harder on the show than I thought we intended to be.
Yeah, I'd like to listen to that too, because I think we spoke about the blog post, which was written after watching the pilot episode. And we were concerned that there were some instances of misinformation and the like. And again, the idea of, ha-ha, blindness is funny because watch all the stupid stuff they do. And, you know.
Right.
It's a different world. I remember saying that I was going to wait until video because I didn't trust NBC. But I grew up. And Jamie, to some extent, I know you did too, in the shadow of If You Can See What I Hear, being on HBO every other day when HBO was first starting up. And So you would get people making jokes about what happened in that film at you. And I grew to resent that movie a lot. I didn't resent Mark Singer. I mean, he was the hero in V. I couldn't do that, EOL speaking here. That was the common kind of thing. And in fact, there were people at CSUN tapping me on the shoulder. There's Stevie Wonder. Yes, he's here every year. Good to see Stevie's here. Great. You know, but that's what people focus on. People focus on celebrity, or they focus on sometimes the negative aspects of humor, be that with blindness or unfortunately with racial comedies. And that's what Dave Chappelle faced when Dave Chappelle came back. You know, was he funny, or was it because of portrayals of certain stereotypes? And he has talked a lot about that. I thought was very interesting. It is something that I'm aware of, but I don't know. I think everybody's going to come at this differently because everybody finds something different about humor. I like British humor, especially classic things other than Monty Python, but not everybody would like some of the things that I like. So I think that's very subjective. And what you might find is offensive is subjective. I mean, it's nice that it is based on someone who is or has gone through these experiences like we do. I'm just not sure under that looking glass it works or doesn't work because I haven't watched it. But yeah, I agree with you guys. It's something that we, you know, can look at. I still don't know if it'll make a full season. So that's my kind of look at it, is if it can make a full season, then I'm in for it, because I gave up 22 half hours to NBC last year for a show I did like that had a blind character that they killed.
Right. And I expect we'll fluctuate from episode to episode. We'll like it one week and not like it the next. So that's kind of the way with probably a lot of, like you just said, Joe, any portrayal of any stereotype at all, or whether it's a disability or a race or whatever, that's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this week, XP users meet their doom, as you all know, and this next email comes from Brett. Brett is talking about the reasons that people may want to cling to XP despite it not being supported by Microsoft anymore. And the first reason that he gives is about games. So there are some, like the ones written by Robert Bedstone, that can work on more modern operating systems. And then there's some, like, you remember the old Grizzly Gulch?
Oh, Buddy does
Man,
that so
Buddy
well.
If Buddy were here, he would...
if you thought his GTO infomercial was a great homage, Buddy could do those voices really
oh,
well.
Oh, yeah. And there's Chillingham and games like that. Those don't really run well on more modern operating systems. They can have some stability issues. So people may just want to keep XP around, you know, as their gaming rig.
Or something like the Destino project might help, you know, where they brought some of those great games from the DOS era into the iOS era. I mean, they're certainly that.
Yeah.
There's games getting re-released or refactored for iOS and Android all the time. So maybe that might be a project for some of those. But that's a good point.
Exactly. The other reason that he mentions here, and this is for blind and sighted people, and I think this is pretty much true, is that they really don't understand the security risks that they're taking by staying on XP. It's sort of like they feel like, hey, this is a scare tactic by Microsoft in order to get more money out of us to upgrade to this later operating system. And there isn't really, they haven't fully understood that what Microsoft and others are saying is valid. There are security problems, and it's not just a sort of ethereal, maybe will happen, maybe will not kind of
doomsday
deal.
Doomsday scenario.
No. It is real.
Let me introduce you to spyware, malware, and one dead hard drive.
And it's not even just about not being able to boot up your computer. You have data on that computer, and that
and
data
so
can be compromised. Yeah, they will have
they,
it too.
They
so
also
if you're
will have
thinking,
your data.
Well, I won't do any of my banking anymore from this machine or anything, but I can still have it on the internet. Oh, no. They can access all sorts of data.
And many of us don't have the millions of dollars that the UK and the Dutch and other governments are paying Microsoft to keep supporting it for them. But Microsoft is all about that. Nope, this is gone. This is over. This is done. This is it. And again, you know, there was a lot of that kind of bashing of Microsoft on this. Let's see. What just got killed recently? Well, yeah, Apple killed off a version of its operating system that was only 4 years old. Or the iPad, one that I have, is stuck on iOS 5 and forever will be stuck on iOS 5 forever. you know, this has been a long time coming. They've tried to warn. They've tried to get away from it. They've extended it way longer than anybody thought, probably to their own detriment. It's not a money grab. It really is something that is not designed for modern day usage nor modern day hardware. So if you are listening to this or reading the email at sarahtalk.com, this is not a joke. This is serious. Other assistive technology manufacturers have said this as well. You want to be off that sooner than later, whenever possible. Windows 8 or Windows 7 or a Mac, any of those things are a really good thing to consider, especially if you're looking at a birthday, a holiday, graduation, what have you. But it really is time to let that go.
Last up, we talk a lot about cookies on this show because we like cookies. I mean, cookies inspire joy and love and rapture and...
Fruit Punch Oreos?
Yeah, okay, maybe not so much the joy and love there. Yes, they can inspire fear at times. And in this case, cookies have inspired poetry.
4/4/2014. There are no grasshoppers in my winter by me from Minnesota. What's this? Yet again, here we are in the midst of another chill winter storm. What can we do? Laugh, cry, stomp, weep and mourn? The walls around keep closing us in, while our teeth chatter, knees rattle, and icicles hang down from our chin. Still we push on the shovel, survive 10, 20, 30 below. So spirits begin to dim and lose their lustrous glow. Till what comes to the ear? A saving eye report. Wander the cookie aisles, the new winter sport. So I do just that. Wrapped in boots, scarves, masks, mittens, and hats. I look up. I look down. I look behind, look in front. But I find no grasshoppers. No matter how hard I hunt.
That was just brilliant. I can't imagine how you Minnesotans are surviving all that snow, but I guess writing poetry is one way that that's happening. And I wonder why grasshoppers would be such a rarity in Minnesota. You know, you would think that that would not necessarily be a regional thing, but Keebler and those elves need to get some pointed inquiries about that. Where are grasshoppers in Minnesota?
JJ, over the weekend at a booth that I was doing, and his was across from me, asked if we had had the Sriracha Pringles on EOL yet. And I had said, no, those are only available in Chicago. And I had actually tweeted that a couple of weeks prior on twitter.com/EOL show. So I know of them, but no, we hadn't tried them because they are a rarity and they are very much locked into that region.
We're going to have to set up like some kind of co-op or something where people in different regions ship each other stuff. Yeah.
So Moxie and Moon Pies and Sriracha Pringles.
Yes.
Yeah, we need. Yeah.
Right. And you guys, I can ship cheer wine from here. Okay. If you've never had cheer wine, it's a really good soda.
I know that you're not supposed to take fruits and vegetables back and forth from Texas to Arizona. I saw that going through a couple of checkpoints. So I am aware of that. That did happen once or twice. I don't know. Can you ship that poutine dog down from up there in Michigan?
Oh, wow. That
don't know if I'd want to eat it by the time it got to you.
It would certainly end up that way.
But we're still going to have a lot more. You guys were prolific in your feedback while some of us were out traveling for various events. And of course, remember to stay tuned after the interview to hear some of your April Fool's comments.
Well, we are not limited to any region. We would love to hear from you. Resources@sarahtalk.com is the email address. You can certainly follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/sarahtalk. Using iBlink Radio, right from the front page, you can leave an iReport. We'd love to hear from you that way. Or call our blab line, 866-997-2522. It's time now for Roundabout. Well, first up, we love it when things go viral, when good things go viral, such as a letter from Helen Keller on Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. She figured out a way to enjoy Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, complete with Ode to Joy, the choir singing. And interestingly, they took the front of a speaker off of a stereo system, and she was able to feel the vibrations and stated that she could actually distinguish voices from strings, from brass instruments. Now that fascinates me.
Yeah.
The idea of rhythm and vibration is one thing, but to be able to really have that kind of distinction through the vibration was something quite amazing, in my opinion.
I do not have such skill. I definitely would not either.
I
played too many video games with force feedback for me to be able to tell anything other than, yeah, it's vibrating. Yeah, I must be hitting a wall or something.
I remember when I was in junior high and high school, we would go to state competitions for band, and I was a trumpet player, and so I would have the chance to meet all these other different brass players who came to, you know, the state competitions. And one that I met was a French horn player, and his brother was a trumpet player. The trumpet player could hear perfectly well, and the French horn player had been deaf always, but he was still good enough to be able to make it to the state competition. And that, to me, was really amazing, never having heard. And yet he still enjoyed music in his way enough to play an instrument and not only play it, but be expert at it.
What did you think of the video and the article of the deaf woman who heard for the first time at 40 years old?
Oh, wow. You know, that video was really interesting and also sparked a bit of controversy in a blog post that was posted after that. And when I first watched this video, I felt a little uncomfortable watching it because I felt like this should have been a private moment for someone. And I guess that she agreed to be videoed, but watching her hear for the first time, and there was certainly tears of joy, and I think also a point where she just became very overwhelmed at hearing the voice that kind of kept yammering the months of the year and the days of the week.
It's very high. Yes, her voice was very high.
And I just thought, you know, she knows she's being videoed, and I'm sure that she is ecstatic, but at the same time, was there ever a point when she was like, turn the video off? I'm really, this is a very significant and private moment in my life. And then there was a blog post as a follow-up to that that essentially said, don't tweet these inspirational videos about things like this. And the reasoning behind it was that, for one thing, it provided, you know, it's very inspiring, but it makes people who aren't in the know think that anyone who is deaf can just walk in, get this operation, and be cured, fixed, you know, all of that stuff.
Right.
And that was the second problem with the article, is the maybe subtle implication, but certainly there, that if you are deaf or disabled in some way, you can only be inspirational if you are fixed.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's,
we've all heard
we
that
don't
one.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. Is there an operation that can fix that for you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm a mixed things. When I was in the Department for Rehab Services and DBS, I used to hear this a lot. And certainly when working with employers, when I myself would go to work with an employer and represent myself as a blind person who was employed, and how easy and wonderful it would be if they would do the same, you know, that would come up. Like, so do you stay up with the latest technology in case there's a quote unquote cure? You know,
yep.
Golly, I'm perfectly fine. It's you who seems to have the problem with, you know, you just nod your head and things like that. And she herself, Joanne, I believe is her name, posted an article where she actually explained all of what she was feeling and what was going on in her side of the story. But it was a really interesting conversation, A, because it's in the deaf community and it's always interesting to learn about other disabilities than our own. But it did bring up a lot of familiarity of these conversations, you know, what should or should not be said or what could or cannot be said. But check out the show notes and look at some of these articles that we're talking about and see what you think about it and send us your feedback on it, as well as whether you would be surprised to know that that painting on your wall that you got at the flea market or through a relative even was worth tons of money and you didn't know about it until just recently. And this is a common thing because of the Monuments Men movie and all the things that came out of German stealing of things during World War II and people. Do they have the rights to those collections that were stolen, or does it belong to those who have inherited it through Uncle so-and-so or Aunt so-and-so over the years? Or there could be just the fact that your painting was just stolen and you picked it up kind of cheap. So that Velvet Elvis or those dogs playing poker actually is worth a ton of money.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think I have anything on my wall that's worth millions, but maybe my wife and I need to kind of go browse around and kind of, because she likes to go to yard sales and stuff, so.
Yeah, and you can find maybe weird stuff at yard sales and flea markets and stuff. I remember being at a flea market and they were literally selling, here we have cough syrup from 1978.
Uh-huh.
And they were just selling
well, I'm
that.
Wanting that.
Fermented, and boy, will it make you see something or feel better. I'm not
You'll
really
stop
sure.
coughing because mainly you won't be breathing anymore, so it won't matter.
I couldn't find the remote one day, and I don't know who hit it where, and it was on one of those reality show channels that was showing people going into other people's garages, and the deal was, we'll clean it out, but we get to sell whatever's on the inside of it. And it was one where they actually cleaned out a garage of a person who was related to the Cleveland Browns, and inside was a trophy for winning the championship pre-Super Bowl from like 1945 or something. And they were all like, how do we verify this? I mean, how do we know? How can we begin? You know, and
yeah.
It was really interesting. And it was a huge thing. I mean, it was this gigantic thing. And they contacted the Cleveland Browns. And this is actually outside of Raleigh, North Carolina, where they were doing this. And gentleman drove overnight to come down from the Cleveland Browns organization and pick up said trophy when it was offered to them. So I think it was authentic, and he was very happy to receive it. But, you know, there's that kind of thing. My family always calls me to tell me on, hey, check out, you know, blank blank on the news. They're going to show a bunch of collectible toys. I don't want to watch that. I broke or lost or I don't know where a lot of those are. And I had a lot of those. So, no, I don't want to watch that. That depresses me to no end. It was like, and here's the Death Star. The original set is still worth blank in the box. Ah!
Well, you know, Ricky, you could go downstairs to your basement to look around, although perhaps I'm making light of something that's actually a little more serious and probably a good story to end this podcast on.
Yes, going downstairs is something I do regularly because I live in a split-level house. But if I were in a wheelchair, that would be problematic for me, at least until they refine this technology in this last article. This is really bizarre, and I'm not entirely sure how it works, but it right. is actually making some progress, and so this may be a legitimate thing before long. So in your wheelchair, you're able to roll along and do whatever you need to do. But when it comes to stairs or getting out of the car and such, that's kind of a problem for this thing on wheels. But what they've done is they're essentially fitting the wheels out with shocks. And so these are able to keep the chair stable as you're going either over bumps or downstairs or even again moving from the inside to out of your car. So I want to see this because I can't quite picture. I can see how if the wheel rolls downward, the shock absorber could expand and give you kind of a stable platform. But why wouldn't the chair at some point possibly flip or tip forward or something like that? You know, you got your front wheels on one surface and your back wheels on another. I'm just not seeing how exactly this keeps stable.
And you're going down. What about going back up?
Yeah.
Going up could be interesting. You better have really strong arms unless you've got a motorized chair.
Maybe it's like a transformer.
And brakes to keep you from rolling back.
Yeah, that's true. Once again, you'll be rolling over Balmer. I think this is fascinating. I see a lot about exosuits and different things that would help with those who are physically disabled. It is really a wonderful time for a lot of this technology. We often look at what we have working for us with various talking tablets and phones and things like that. But man, in this space, it seems to be just going full gangbusters with all these neat ways to overcome things that I never really think about. And, you know, that's why I listen to Wade Wingler and the Crossroads of the Assistive Technology Minutes and the like, because Wade covers a lot more disabilities than just blindness on his podcast. And this is this is one that I saw come out of his feed for In Data.
Definitely. Definitely check that out. It's right available on iBlink Radio. We always enjoy Wade. He's been on Serospectives a few times.
He has. And in fact, I may run into him at the Radio Reading Services Convention in Fort Wayne at the end of June, because I invited him and another local alum, Mr. Jeremy Curry, and I think Dave from Envision is going to be there. It's going to be like a mini convention before the big conventions start. That's a lot of audio still to come, along with the audio that's already on iBlink Radio and other places, like those of you who listen to us on the Radio Reading Services themselves through SPN Weekly.
Well, Joe, you have an interview coming up right after the news. Why don't you go ahead and set that up for us real quickly, and then we'll kind of give our contact information and let you take it away.
Yeah, we were going through the checklist of need it, got it. And then it was, oops, we missed one. How did Dropbox, Dropbox, you cute little nefarious thing. You were Dropbox. Related to the mailbag, and it stole one of our little eye reports, which we found on one of the backup drives. And we've got that. And it is a conversation I had with Ability Magazine, and they had Andre Bocelli on the cover of the one that was being displayed at the CSUN booth. My discussion with them, and certainly a lot of things you can learn about and how to subscribe, and a very neat periodical to take a look at. And that'll be coming up here. But I think that may be sort of the end of those CSUN things. Although, shameless plug, the show called EOL Show, we did another NOMS edition.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
yes,
some
we
people.
Did.
We didn't get to the chocolate potato chips that someone asked us to try and get to, but we got to some other
seaweed.
Yeah, there was
Seaweed involved.
There were bean chips, and there were root beer float flavored chips Ahoy, and the results.
Oh, and everything's better with bacon, so there was bacon Ritz.
Yeah, there was bacon Ritz. Yeah, so if you want to hear two people who are related to this program eating said things from San Diego, and maybe a movie review as well, head on over to eolshow.com, for we did not just record CSUN audio. There was a lot of other audio that we recorded at the time, too.
Indeed, that is true. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us this time. At the very end of the podcast, Patrick will tell you how to get a hold of us. But we will let Joe do that interview, and then we'll come back next week and talk about more news, including the aftermath, the fallout from the death of Windows XP. Right here on the Serotalk podcast. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Welcome back, everyone, to March Madness edition of the CSUN 2014 coverage sponsored by HIMSS of the Serotalk Podcast Network. I'm Joe Steinkamp here with Chet from Ability Magazine.
Yes.
Oh,
hi, how are you?
Doing well. It seems like you guys are having a good show so far.
Wonderful show. It's a little overwhelming. We have so many fans coming up. It's having us sign autographs, but we're handling it.
There you go. I have that very same problem in some of our conventions. It's the very same thing, but we all don't have marching bands like the ones out front this morning, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry for that. We just had them out there practicing for us. They'll be back in a few minutes.
Oh, man. That's still kind of surreal.
Well, it is.
Tell our listeners a little bit about what you guys do and how they can learn a bit more about where they can find your magazine.
Well, Ability Magazine, actually, it's on the web. It's in several formats, web, digiversion, but also print.
Okay.
And one of the things we're showing at the show here at CSUN today is that we're the first magazine now in the world that is actually allowing the print version to also be heard. So what we've done is we've created a partnership with VoiceEye, and we put a VoiceEye QR code on every editorial page, and with a smartphone, you download the VoiceEye app, it's free, and then you scan that code and it will read out loud the print editorial per
page.
Wow,
okay, cool. So that's what you're announcing at show, but give us a little bit of background. How long have you been in print, and some ideas of what your format is like, what they can expect in the magazine?
You can expect to be surprised, and it's so unexpected, the expectation. I don't know where I'm going with that. But so it's a magazine that deals with health, disability, human potential.
Right.
It's somewhat what we call celebrity-driven, so
okay.
Each issue has a person, a notable person, oftentimes actors, television, movie stars. Sometimes we've interviewed a couple of presidents. We did the beta test with Andrea Bocelli on the cover, an interview with him.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, Leah, who's next to me, who's also an opera singer, interviewed him.
Oh, wow.
So,
and he's a big technology person. He uses HIMS devices and kind of like Stevie, who was here earlier this week.
Yeah, he was here yesterday, Stevie.
Yep.
So we have these different interviews we have with these celebrities, and they talk about their different connection to health and disability. So whether it's Montel Williams talking about MS that he has, or if it's a person like Shamar Moore, who's an actor and his mother has MS. I don't know why I said MS twice, but we do all types,
everything
from physical disabilities, mental, behavioral, everything that's encompassed around that word disability.
Fantastic. So where can people find out more or subscribe?
They could just come right here, right now. Where are they? Come on down. No, they could go online, abilitymagazine.com.
Right.
They could go to Facebook. If you go to Facebook, it's facebookabilitymagazine.com.
We'll give you a like.
That's actually a good point there. If you like us on Facebook, you get a free digital magazine automatically.
Oh, wow.
So you get to see it and feel what it's like. You know, it's subscription-based like any other publication.
Right.
We're distributed by Time Warner. You could buy it on the newsstand. But the web version is the most accessible, even though we're doing the QR code, which is great for people with dyslexia and other reading difficulties. You could also get it online, which is probably, in my view, it's probably the most accessible format right now.
Probably. Well, great. Thank you for your time today.
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot of
great
reading.
Oh, here comes the band.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I got to look out behind me. That's the beautiful part about having a convention during March Madness.
That was so surreal.
Funny
to see that happening.
Was so
wild. I know.
Mascots
so
fighting each other in the parking lot. It's not something you see every day. That is definitely
you
interesting.
You saw me do that?
Yeah, I
just
know.
Like the way you looked at me.
What was all up with that? That's terrible. Chad, thank you for your time. The Sarah Talk Podcast Network, CSUN 2014, sponsored by HIMS. I'm Joe Steinkamp.
Hey, Sarah Talk. This is Jake from Illinois. Just calling in about the April Fool's Day podcast. I loved it, and in all sarcasm, I do agree about voiceover, but then maybe again I don't. No, seriously, I've started using it and love it. I think Apple's done an amazing job. So anyhow, thanks, and keep up the great work as always. Take care.
Hello, this is Randy Shelton, and I just listened to Sarah Talk Podcast 192, and wow, did you take me on a trip down memory lane. Anybody remember the Navigator Braille displays? I didn't own one myself, but I got to use one when I was volunteering at the Blind Association here in Pittsburgh back in 92, the year after I graduated from college, and we had one in one of the centers there, so I used it anytime I got on the computer to type up reports and things like that. Or how about the Braille Touch? That was something that wasn't around for long. I think it was manufactured by a company in Europe, and it was a small device that was probably, it was a spinoff, I guess, of the old Versabrails, but not really. And it was more like, it was a lot smaller, and it folded up, and the braille cells were on the top. I don't think it was more than 20 cells. It may not have even been 20. It wasn't, I don't think it was nearly as small as the Braille Mate, which I didn't have either, but I did see. But, and the Braille Touch folded up, like I said, you opened it up to access the keys that were little plastic discs on the inside, on the bottom, and then the Braille came up along the top edge of the lid. It was an interesting design. And you were talking about Siri and funny things that Siri comes up with sometimes. I was at work one day and I said to Siri, I'm tired. Can I go back to bed? And Siri came back and said, put this iPhone down right now and take a nap. I'll wait here. I really liked Patrick's rotary phone. That was great. I haven't used one of them since about 1976, when I was about 8 years old. Then we moved, and we had touch-tone phones ever since. But I do have a friend who's in his 60s now, and he used the rotary dial phone up until about a year ago. Now he has a touch-tone phone. So, yes, there are people who still use them. And, buddy, enjoy those cookies. You can have the grasshoppers and the thin mints. But if anybody has any tagalongs you'd like to get rid of, send them my way. They're my favorites. Anyway, always enjoy the podcast. They're entertaining and thought-provoking. Have a good day and keep up the great work.
Hi, this is Terry Nord from Moora, Minnesota. I understand that, buddy, this has nothing to do with the podcast for this month, although I did want to say, too, that it was wonderful. For the 1st of April, the April Fool's Show. It was great. I loved it. But I understand Buddy has gotten through, all the way through Papa Sangre 1, and I am issuing him a challenge because I don't know how to get a hold of him, but I'm issuing him a challenge. I'm almost through it, and I plan to get all the way through 2 and see what he can do with that. So... I'm having a blast with it. I wish somebody hadn't shown me it because it's way too addictive. Anyway, thank you guys for what you do. You do a wonderful job. It's really, really fun to have gotten to know you guys a little bit through your podcasts and broadcasts and that kind of thing. It's, you guys are all a lot of fun. So take care. And from Moora, from cold Moora, which it is, it's cold up here, and hopefully warming up. It's snowing as we speak. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hello, iBlink Radio, or Sero Talk. I am Tony Yor, and I thought I'd share an April Fool's story with you. So I was listening to your podcast that you do on April Fool's, and, I decided I would play a trick on somebody. So I called them up, and I told them that Apple was getting rid of the on-screen keyboard in iOS 7.1.1, and I warned them not to update to the latest software. Yeah, and I also, and I said that this was the case for sighted people, too, that they were no longer going to have an on-screen keyboard. Yeah, so... And I told him that Apple was encouraging people to download mBraille. And later I texted him and told him that Apple was directing people to the Braille Authority of North America's website so they could learn how to use the new method of data entry. And for the time being, they would allow people to use voice dictation or Siri to get data entry until enough people download an mBraille. Yeah, he was really panicked, and he said he was switching to an Android phone. So I thought I'd share that with you guys. Anyway, thanks for the great podcast.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.